A Terrifying Journey in Bolivia by Rosa Duncan. Dear Jane, you asked me to write down a few of my adventures for you. I've been looking through my photo albums and going over some of my old trips, trying to decide on which ones to tell you about. In the end, I've settled on just one story, an adventure that I had in Bolivia many years ago now, when I was only 22. I happened to be travelling through South America during the Falklands War, or La Guerra de las Malvinas, depending on how you look at it. I started off with Stan, my boyfriend, who was working at the University of Curitiba in southern Brazil. I spent about 2 months with him before taking off with a friend to join the carnival in Rio for a few days. A brief visit turned into a much longer trip. I decided to put off returning to Curitiba and headed off to explore northern Brazil and the Amazon, starting from Belém. By the time I got back, things had cooled off between Stan and me. We decided to split up, so I said goodbye, picked up my rucksack again, and set off for more adventures. By the time I got to Bolivia, I guess I was pretty worn out. I'd been travelling for 4 months. Anyway, I'd only been in La Paz a couple of days when I came down with some sort of flu. I got really sick. I had a horrible cough and my chest felt really tight. It was quite hard to breathe. All I really wanted to do was lie down in my hotel room and sleep. But it was noisy, hot, and uncomfortable. I spent a few days there, but didn't get any better. I wondered if the high altitude of La Paz was part of the problem. Even healthy travellers can find it difficult to breathe there because of the low levels of oxygen. I decided to head down into the jungle to see if the lower altitude and humid air could help me. I don't remember much about the bus trip down into the jungle. I think I must have passed out and slept for most of the trip. I do remember falling off my seat at one point and people helping me, trying to pick me up and put me back on the seat. I remember thinking, please, just let me lie down here on the floor. It's so comfortable here. Then I must have blacked out again, because I don't remember anything else. When I came round, we had arrived in Coroico. A girl I'd met on the bus, Lydia, looked after me and found a hostel for us both and checked me in. I stayed in my room for the next 2 days, only going out when I ran out of drinking water. Instead of making me better, the humidity of the jungle turned out to make me feel even sicker. I knew I had to get back to La Paz again, away from this humid air. I went to the bus station to buy a ticket back to La Paz. "Passport?" demanded the man in the ticket office. When I handed over my English passport, he said, "You English? No seats on bus." "Well, maybe tomorrow?" "No, not tomorrow. No seats on bus for English." "What about the day after tomorrow?" It took a while for the message to get through to me. There were never going to be any seats free for an English passenger. The war in Malvinas wasn't doing much for our popularity in Bolivia. This man's attitude suggested that I could rule out bus travel as a way of getting back to La Paz. But how was I going to get there? I headed back to my hostel to lie down, as I was feeling dizzy as well as desperate. Maybe I'd be able to deal with this better if I had a little rest. Just outside my hostel, I bumped into the guy I'd travelled with several weeks earlier in Brazil. It was great to see Peter again, though I wasn't really in a state to enjoy his company. He was quite shocked by my appearance and determined to help me out. I'd been bottling up a lot of emotions since my bus station experience, and I'm afraid that Peter's kindness made me break down. I was so lucky to have run into him just at that moment. Through my tears, I explained the problem. I had to get back to La Paz, but I couldn't work out how. I felt like I was on the verge of cracking up. It was all so difficult. Peter said not to worry. He'd come up with something. He bought me some water and tried to get me to eat some fruit. And then he left me in my room and headed off to find me some transport. He was gone for a long time, and I must have fallen asleep. Suddenly, there was someone knocking on my door. Rosa, wake up. It's Peter. I tumbled out of bed and opened the door. Come in. What time is it? It's about midnight, said Peter. But listen, I've tracked down this guy who will give you a lift into La Paz. But he's setting off at 5 a.m, so you need to be ready to go with him. It was hard to take in when I was still half asleep. Who is it? Why is he going to La Paz? Why will he take me? He's just this guy I met in a cafe. He's a salesman. He's going to La Paz to sell clothes. I told him your story, and he feels sorry for you. He'll take you in his car. Just be ready to go when he shows up. He's got a lot of appointments in La Paz. I was very grateful. I thanked Peter and gave him a hug. I told him I'd be ready to go at 5. I felt a bit nervous about getting into a car with a total stranger at 5 o'clock in the morning. But I couldn't come up with a better idea, and I needed to get back to La Paz. I decided to go along with Peter's plan, unless I got bad vibes from the salesman when I met up with him. There would still be time to back out if I didn't like the look of him, or his car. I went downstairs and checked out of the hostel, explaining that I needed to get to La Paz in a hurry. Just before 5 o'clock, there was a quiet knock on my door. Señorita Rosa. I opened the door and looked at my saviour. He certainly didn't look too scary. If he'd been 2 meters tall and built like a wrestler, that would have put me off a bit. But he was very short and looked rather sweet. I'm Jose. I go to La Paz. You come? Yes, Señor Jose. Thank you so much. I'm coming now. His little blue car was parked just around the corner. I looked it over before getting in. It could do with a coat of paint, but otherwise it seemed in quite good condition. We got in and set off. Dawn was just breaking as we left town, and it looked like a beautiful day. I started to feel better. Maybe it was the thought of getting back to La Paz. We didn't talk much on the trip, partly because of the language difficulties. But the main reason that we didn't talk much was the road. It was the most terrifying drive I've ever been on. At first, I tried to make out that I felt calm. But by the third hairpin bend when we came face to face with a speeding truck, I gave up acting and held onto the window frame with all my strength. The road twisted and turned, and the edge of the road plunged down into a valley about a kilometre below. There were no guardrails, so if you went too close to the edge, there was nothing to stop you from falling off. It was wide enough for 2 vehicles to pass each other comfortably, so when we had to pass another car, we inched forward, our wheels seeming to hang over the edge of the mountain. I didn't know it at the time, but later found out that this road is called Death Road. Between 200 and 300 people die on this road every year. It starts in La Paz at an altitude of 4,600 metres above sea level and then slopes down sharply to Coroico, with an altitude of only 1,700 metres above sea level. It's incredibly steep, narrow and badly looked after. Many people consider it the most dangerous road in the world. I'm one of them. I've never been anywhere like it. Señor Jose was an excellent driver. He slowed down on the bends and he didn't try to overtake anyone. But there were plenty of other drivers on the road who drove like maniacs, and there wasn't much Señor Jose could do about them. I've never been so scared in my life. At one point, we saw a bus that had half fallen off the road. After that, I noticed that Señor Jose really slowed down. And although he didn't let on that he was nervous, I saw that once or twice his knuckles turned quite white on the steering wheel. It took 3 hours to cover the 60 kilometers to La Paz. When Señor José dropped me off at the station, I wanted to kneel and kiss the ground. But instead, I paid him. He didn't want anything, but I insisted on giving him a few dollars and thanked him politely. With shaky legs, I walked towards the station and caught a bus to a hostel that Peter had told me about. It was very different from the other one, set in a quiet courtyard with orange trees and cool, clean sheets. Within a couple of days, I was feeling much better and ready to continue travelling. I decided to head south when I left La Paz this time. I didn't want to travel on Death Road again. I hope this is useful. Love, Rosa.